This is the Inside segment. I'm Harold Fisher. It's the incident seen across the country, viral videos showing the black co-captain of a riverboat being attacked by a group of white men in Montgomery, Alabama. Police say he asked them to move their pontoon boat from a reserved space. Well, tonight, we take a look at the issues surrounding this incident and why it has attracted so much attention in the black community. My guests are Randy Scott, reporter, an executive producer at Alabama Public Television, and attorney Malik Zulu Shabazz, national president of Black Lawyers for Justice. Lines are open if you have a comment, if you have a question about the Montgomery brawl at 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. You can tweet or X me at HFisherWHUR or find me on Instagram at Harold T. Fisher. Attorney Shabazz, Randy, thank you both for joining the conversation.
You're welcome. Thank you for having us on.
Absolutely. Randy, are you there?
Yes, I am.
Randy, let's talk a little bit about the latest. First of all, have you heard any updates about the other two suspects in this incident? Have they turned themselves in yet, or are police still waiting for them to do so?
As last I checked, they have not turned themselves in. Now, earlier this afternoon around 1 o'clock, Mayor Stephen Reed of Montgomery and Police Chief Darrell Albert held a press conference where they mentioned that the other two gentlemen that they were looking for were going to turn themselves in probably within the hour or so. And looking at the clock now here in Montgomery, it's about 6:15, 6:16. And last checked about 10 minutes ago, no, they have not turned themselves in. Not to say that they could be doing that right now as we speak, but as last I checked, no, they haven't turned themselves in to authorities.
Mm-hmm. Randy, how would you characterize this incident playing out in Montgomery? We've seen the memes, we've seen the social media activity, but where it happened, in the community or the greater community where this happened, how would you say it's being played out?
It's being played out in the heart of downtown Montgomery, next to the river, which runs through downtown Montgomery, and it's a part of its atmosphere, if you will, and a tourist attraction also, and a visitor station as well, too, because this point is the point of where the Harriet II, which is a riverboat, a tourist attraction, a ride for people who want to take a cruise up the Alabama River for a few miles and come back and enjoy themselves. And so it's a very, very viable, if you will, point of downtown Montgomery. And the history of it is also as well, too. A lot of people are aware that this is a point where some people who were brought to this country dealing with the slave idea, this is for some of them the point where they were unloaded for some boats and brought into downtown Montgomery back in the 1800s, if you will. So the history of it is, yeah, it's a very important part of the city, but it's also a point that people want to help educate people about Montgomery, its history, and also how we can move forward in understanding what is important is to Montgomery. So when this happened, where it happened, there was also a few events going on in Montgomery in near that area, including one event for going back to school preparedness, if you will, giving away some items for parents and their children to have to get them ready for school. It was going on a short distance away from where this dock was, where the Harriet II was supposed to be berthed when it was not either on a tour or coming back from a tour. So
a lot of people had a chance to put their eyes on this when it happened, and not just those who were coming in on the Harriet Riverboat.
Well, the Harriet Riverboat was packed. It was very much packed with lots of people. I've spoken to a friend of mine. She was on it. She saw it. She got a firsthand look at what happened. But on the riverboat, and then people waiting to get onto the riverboat for its next cruise. Mm-hmm. And there were some people who were still around after the events that were held a short distance away. Remember, it's Saturday afternoon. It's a hot summer day in Alabama, in Montgomery, and people were trying to find a way to relax and get out and enjoy themselves. So there were people in and around the area taking in what Montgomery has to offer in the downtown area. So there were plenty of people around, plenty of people on the boat, on the shore, on the gangway, you name it. There are people all over.
Mm-hmm. Attorney Shabazz, you've seen the videos. And so far we know that all three of the suspects so far have been or will be charged with misdemeanor assault. Do you think that those are the appropriate charges? Are they too low? What are your thoughts?
At minimum at this time, for Zachary Shipman, Alan Todd, and Richard Roberts, misdemeanor assault appears to be low to me at this time, but things could develop. I think one thing that we should point out here, WHUR, Howard University, that when Montgomery, Alabama, the name is raised amongst our people, it strikes of historical significance. The Montgomery bus boycott, Rosa Parks, that's Montgomery, Alabama. We talk about Alabama, we're talking about the Edmund Pettus Bridge. We're talking about Lowndes County, the Black Panther Party started in Lowndes County. Dr. Martin Luther King struggles in Selma. We're talking about the Birmingham, the four girls being bombed. So when we see a racial incident like this, we know that there are deep roots there and that likely race is involved. And so we also want to say here on behalf of Black Lawyers for Justice that we believe that hate crime penalties should be looked at seriously here. I know the police chief has come on the news and said that he doesn't believe, Brother Harold, that it was a hate crime, but he has described in the course of his investigation loaded and malicious language that we would like to take a further look at, because there is a likelihood, as we have assessed it, that hate and racial bias was a motive behind that vicious attack on Brother Damian Pickett on that dock on that day.
202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. We are talking about the Montgomery brawl. It happened Saturday evening in Montgomery, Alabama. A co-pilot of a riverboat was attacked by three white men, and it turned into a full-fledged melee. Things got really out of control. But this incident has galvanized the Black community across this country in a way that perhaps we have not seen in a handful of years. We are talking about it. If you have a comment or a question, give us a call at 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Earlier today, at that same press conference, Mayor Stephen Reed said this, and I will ask you, Attorney Shabazz, what you're hearing, and I'll also tell you what I'm hearing as well.
Something that was brought on by reckless individuals who did not really use good judgment and caused an event that certainly was avoidable. The police department reacted very swiftly, very intentionally to address the matter, as did other citizens in the community.
I hear, it's almost a little shade that the mayor kind of threw at some of the people who were part of the attacking body, where he talked about some of the other citizens who acted, appropriately. It almost sounded to me as if there was a tad bit of defense of all the Black people who came to the defense of this riverboat co-pilot. Am I overstepping it here?
You're not overstepping it. You're accurate. And I think what has inspired and made this go viral and Black people really into it is there's one difference. Normally we're seen being completely victimized, that a man like Damian Pickett is attacked and beat down and nothing happens, and maybe there'll be some outrage later. But what has most inspired our people is to see that there were some other brothers who understood that Damian was under attack, and they didn't, they were not selfish, they were sacrificial. And they went to the line and they stood up strong and they defended, in self-defense, they defended Damian Pickett physically. They physically engaged those white attackers. And the way they engaged them and how strongly they engaged them has inspired a lot of our people, because we're so tired of being victims, and somebody stood up. And so those 13 brothers that we see all over the internet that came to Brother Damian Pickett's defense, what the community is saying, what we're hearing out there, many of people are saying that those brothers are heroes.
Mm-hmm. Brandy, what is the community saying down there? How is this incident being received in Montgomery? Have you heard any talk of pushback? I know the police chief even said during the press conference today that they were prepared to deal with any retaliation in the wake of this incident.
Well, the best way to talk about, describe what is going on is the fact that it's being talked about literally 24/7. Everyone is talking about it. Everyone is sharing videos of it. Everyone is sharing the memes of it. And if anything, it's really, for lack of better words, inspire people to stand up and take notice when someone is mistreated. You talk about the help that came to the man to help him while he was being attacked on that gangway, on that deck. Let's not forget the 16-year-old young man who dove off the boat and swam to it to be of assistance. He actually swam from the boat to the deck to help him out. And once the boat was actually docked, finally, after they had enough room to dock, that's when, as they say, more of the cavalry arrived. People are saying, you know, this is something that, you know, the birthplace of the civil rights movement is kind of ironic, because you would think in this, and as people say in this day and age, you know, we're trying to move forward and be at peace with one another, because, you know, this is a big blue world we're living on, but we have to take care of it and ourselves. But when something like this happens, when one person is being mistreated and people see that, and people rise up to help that individual, because at one time it was 6-on-1.
Yeah.
It's about 6 people on one man, and they were not letting up. So people came in to try to stop the situation, and then others came up and said, hey, you know, no more, we're not going to have this. And an interesting point, you asked, what are people talking about? Some people are saying that, you know, they are so glad, you know, in a way, that this was only hand-to-hand, call it old school, if you will, that nobody came out with any weapons, no guns, no knives, none of that. It was basically, okay, stop abusing this man, stop attacking this man, and we will use our hands to stop you from attacking this man. And so that was something that a lot of people took notice of and are saying. And they were saying, you know, it was just ridiculous that this one individual was literally being attacked, and there was no way that they were going to stand back and watch this happen. That was the general gist of what some people I spoke to said. They said, hey, somebody had to do something, and we're here, and we're going to do it.
202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. We are talking about the Montgomery brawl. Alex calling from... Oh, we lost Alex. Alex, give me a call back. Cheryl calling from Maryland. Thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
Hi, I was calling with the comment that was made about the mayor maybe throwing shade, if I heard him correctly, I heard you correctly.
Right.
I don't think he threw shade. I think he said that the police acted swiftly, as well as some other people in the community did. And then that's when you started talking, so I was kind of confused.
Well, no, what I was saying, Cheryl, was that he kind of threw a little shade at the attackers. That's what I was saying, not the people who came to defend the co-captain. Because usually they talk about just their police departments, but he also talked about the citizens who came to defend that man, and saying that they acted appropriately, which I just thought that was an interesting thing for him to slide in. And I think even later in the program, he even said that the accused are not from Montgomery. He said they were from Selma. And okay. Which I also thought that that was a very interesting comment, but Cheryl.
Yeah.
But thank you so much.
I wanted to make sure. I'm like, no, they didn't
say
right
that. But... I got it, Cheryl. Thank you so much.
All right, have a good one.
202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. Gina from Maryland, we're going to be talking to you next. Please do not hang up. You will be able to hear the program. We're going to take a break. But you can hear every edition of the Daily Drum Insight segment via podcast on WHUR.com, or you can download the 96.3 HD2 app on your smartphone and hear the program live in its entirety. As I said, if you're on the phone, stay with us. 202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. We're talking about the Montgomery Brawl. I'm Harold Fisher. John Mons is next with the original Quiet Storm. That's on WHUR. We'll be back on Sirius XM channel 141 in just a few seconds. Welcome back to the Daily Drum on Sirius XM channel 141. I'm Harold Fisher. Tonight we're talking about the Montgomery Brawl, that viral video from Saturday night in Montgomery, Alabama, where a black man, a co-pilot of a riverboat, was attacked by three white people for essentially just doing his job. My guests are Randy Scott, reporter and executive producer at Alabama Public Television, and attorney Malik Zulu Shabazz, national president of Black Lawyers for Justice. If you have a comment or a question, give us a call at 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Before I go back to the phone lines, attorney Shabazz, I think you were going to make a comment.
Okay, Alabama state law says that a person is justified in using physical force to defend themselves or a third person, another person, from imminent or unlawful use of physical force. And that's what those brothers did. I think that's what people are appreciating, that some black men, that some men stood up when a black man was being attacked by six white people. And that they stood up like men, and the law supports it. And so at this hour, I want to say that Black Lawyers for Justice has at least two investigators in the city right now, and that we're there as a legal force to make sure that that the men that defended Mr. Pickett are protected. And also, if Mr. Pickett wants to take a civil action against Shipman Todd or Roberts, or any of the six people that jumped him, just because they're not police departments or have deep pockets does not mean that they can't be held individually liable on a civil level for that vicious attack. And so if Mr. Pickett wants that help, our investigators are going to tell him that he will have that help, and that those individuals that attacked him will not only face criminal charges, but they will face civil lawsuits against their persons, their houses, their boats, and their bank accounts from Black Lawyers for Justice. We make that offer in this hour.
If I could, real quick.
Sure.
If you look at the video, I believe you'll see some women also helping out defending the gentleman as well, too. So there were some women that were there and if you will, took up arms as well, too, to help in the defense of that gentleman.
Yeah. A lot of arms flying on that dock on Saturday. Let me go back to the phone line, 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Gina, calling from Maryland. Thanks for hanging on, Gina. What's on your mind?
Good evening. I have to say, when I saw the video, when I saw the full video, I was so proud in that moment. At first, I didn't know what I was looking at, but then once I realized what was happening, and I was like, what is going on? I was so proud of the gentleman who stood up. I'm an African-American woman, and it just pleased me to no end to see, you know, us coming together for a change instead of, as someone mentioned, being a victim or someone else dying. And then I also liked the fact that, again, everyone was using their hands. Thank God no one had a gun and nothing else happened other than just standing up for yourself with your bare hands. When that young man jumped in that water, I thought I was going to jump through that phone. Like, when he jumped in the water to help, it was amazing, and I'm so proud of them.
Yeah. Gina, thank you so much for your phone call. 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Marcus calling from Baltimore. Thanks for calling, Marcus. What's on your mind?
Hey, I just had a question. I definitely believe that the men had a right to defend themselves and to defend the brother that was being attacked. But I had a question about whether the brother who used the chair, whether that's considered unreasonable force, because that was that considered a weapon, or will he be charged anything like that?
You know, that's an interesting, you know, question, because during the press conference today, Attorney Shabazz, the police chief said that their investigators would like to talk to Reggie Gray. That's the name of the man who was wielding the chair. But they did not issue a warrant for him. They did not suggest charges. They did not call him a person of interest. Is that nuanced? How would you characterize that legally?
It's hard to gauge. They might just be trying to get Brother Reggie to come in to charge him. We hope that that won't happen. We know that Reggie Gray was responding, and he responded quite strongly. Some will say that he was unreasonable when he hit that white woman over the head with that chair. But we want to talk to Brother Reggie Gray to see what his state of mind was, because
angry,
his
perhaps?
State of mind.
Yeah,
well,
quite angry.
We're gonna say regardless to his state of mind, hands off Brother Reggie Gray, and to free Brother Reggie Gray, because Reggie Gray was probably minding his own business until he saw Brother Pickett come under attack. So he took a strong action, and we are here to defend him. Our community should defend him. He should have the best attorneys. Hopefully he won't be charged. I mean, I like the fact that, you know, the mayor is a brother and the police chief is a brother. I mean, this is not Bull Connor. Mm-hmm. And this thing may have turned out differently had it been a different mayor. So we're watching carefully. But we're not going to turn on Brother Reggie Gray in this hour.
What would be the legal defense for Reggie Gray in a court of law? I mean, we obviously have the court of public opinion. And then we have the black court of public opinion, okay? But in a court of law, how would you, without giving away to, you know, your kind of strategy, if you were to, you know, be retained to defend any of these people, but I just wonder, the chair incident, as Marcus has just brought up, in this incident, it's high profile. Everybody, you know, everybody and their mama has posted a chair meme, but when it comes to the law, what's the argument to defend?
Well, we need more facts before we come to a strong conclusion. We need more facts. I mean, straight up, we don't know what that white woman was doing before Reggie Gray hit her over the head on the video with the chair. We don't know what her involvement was. And again, we don't know what his state of mind was. And we don't know his, we just don't know his state of mind. So I can't reach a definitive defense until I would talk to him. I'm looking to talk with Brother Reggie Gray and to make sure that he has the best criminal defense lawyers in Alabama if he's charged. And I hope he won't be charged. But we'll see how things develop. Some would say he was unreasonable. And as you say, our folks would say that he was more than reasonable.
Yeah, and I always say, you know, I got my law degree out of a Cracker Jack box. But I think that just looking at the video, and you're looking, you know, at the man on the dock, and he's trying to do his job. He hasn't hit anyone. He hasn't attacked anyone. We can obviously see that the language, even though we may not be able to hear it, but we can obviously see that the heat was on between him and one of the people who first attacked him. But the bottom line was he was attacked by one, then two, then three people.
Mm-hmm.
And at that point, I would think, at least common sense says, it's already three against one, and then as Randy was saying, it's now six or seven against one. All bets are off at that point, in my mind.
That's correct. And he would take what some would call a revolutionary act in this circumstances. His strong actions, but we don't know what the white woman was doing. We don't know whether she was orchestrating this or a part of this. We don't know what she was doing.
Yeah.
And you know, sometimes in this world, brother, we may be right in the eyesight of God, even if the law may technically declare us wrong.
Mm-hmm.
You know, sometimes we've had brothers like Huey Newton and Stokely and Dr. King, they've gone to jail, and we've gone to jail for this cause. And so if brother, you know, we hope nothing happens, he will get the strongest of defense, and it seems like brother Reggie's strong enough, so even if he does catch a charge, he will be remembered in history for taking a strong act and a strong time, regardless to what happens. But he will get solid defense and help from the community there and from Black Lawyers for Justice.
202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. Marcus, thank you. Let's go to Marsha. Marsha calling from Louisiana. Marsha, thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
Well, I just wanted to say that this is the first time that a couple of my friends have ever witnessed something like this that happened, and African-American people stuck together and they all, you know, fought for the same cause. And it was just such a shame that they would, you know, jump on that man, six or seven people jumped on that one man, but everybody, even people who didn't know him, they didn't know who he was, but they all came to rally around him.
Yeah. Yeah. Thank you so much, Marsha. I appreciate your phone call. You know, Randy, one of the things that was asked in the press conference today of the police chief was whether or not there had been any record of previous incidents with the same owners of this pontoon boat. The chief said during the press conference that he had no prior knowledge of any incident. However, the reporting is that the other captain of the riverboat told a reporter that he has a history of unpleasant interaction with the owners of this pontoon boat. Is that what you're hearing down there?
Rumor has it that there has been some talk about this person having some run-ins with people in Montgomery. Hasn't been authenticated yet, but I know that, as Chief Albert said, his department is definitely going to explore this and see what exactly is going on, because this pontoon boat was parked in a place that was only reserved for the riverboat, and only someone who understands the waterways and how boats operate will know, okay, well, maybe this will be a good area to dock the boat, tie it up, and go do whatever you want to with it. A person would know that. But also, too, it is kind of well known that this is only reserved for that Harriet to river boat that is there, and even river boats that have been there before it have used that one particular area to dock at. So the investigation is on, and I've been hearing that from not just folks here in Montgomery, people who live here, about there being possible run-ins before with the person who is with that pontoon boat, but also some members, ironically, let me also fill you in with this. Also going on at the same time, the National Association of Black Journalists, NABJ, was having their national convention in Birmingham, Alabama, that week. Now, a little bit before all this happened in Montgomery, they had a busload of journalists to come down who wanted to visit Montgomery and take a tour of Montgomery to see things like the EJI Museum and Monument that were down here, and for some it was their first time being in Alabama. So they left actually right before all this started, but they were still in state. And some of them have been doing some research and some investigating on their own, looking into, okay, are there any connections with the people that were on the pontoon boat and anyone in here in Montgomery? Because where would they know how to get here and come to this particular area? That means that maybe there was some familiarity. That's what some of the things they're investigating and trying to figure out just who these people are.
Yeah.
Because one report that has come out is that some of the people who are tied to that pontoon boat own some businesses within the Selma area, some well-known businesses, I believe, that some people have been starting to say, well, you know, we need to boycott these businesses because these folks have done this or tied to what has happened here in Montgomery. That's some of the investigation that's going on, especially from the law enforcement standpoint, like I said, from journalists. I mean, if you look at it, you had over, close to 4,000 journalists of NABJ who are here in state who are looking into this as well.
Yeah. Okay. And we put this into context that Donald Trump had just had a rally there, I think the night or two before in the same city.
The night before, in the same city.
So that might contribute to the climate. The night before,
right up the gangway, the walkway from where this event took place.
Okay, so this was adjacent to where the violence happened. So there may be some connection there to Mr. Trump's visit. Also here, we're looking into Vassar's Mini Mart, according to our research, is owned by a white man named Chase Shipman. Okay, one of the defendants arrested is Zachary Shipman. I don't know at this point whether or not they're brothers or they're related, but Chase Shipman, who I read runs Vassar's Mini Mart, is vehemently denying that he was a part of it. But who is Zachary Shipman? The names are exactly alike, and what is his role at the Mini Mart? And so I do want to emphasize, like the journalist said, that we can't just rely on the police. We have to do our own investigations. I'm hoping to be in Alabama if I get the call on Saturday to follow my investigation team there, because we must do our own investigations. They can prove fruitful.
Let me go back to the phone lines, 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Tony calling from Bowie. Tony, thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
Thanks again for taking my call. Hope everybody's doing fine.
Sure.
I just want to say that I think this is a seed that Trump has planted in the minds of white folks, thinking that they're privileged and, hey, we're going to act out any kind of way we want to. And these black people down there say, hey, we had enough of this. And I think this is just the first of many incidents that's going to occur when white folks think they're privileged and they can treat us any kind of way. We're tired.
Well, Tony, let me just say that the issue of white privilege existed long before there was a Donald Trump. So let's be really, really clear about that. And to the mayor's point where he said this was something that did not need to happen. And the co-pilot, the man who was attacked, he was just doing his job. And this could have been just another day in Montgomery, Alabama, when he said, we've got a riverboat here. You can't park here. Please move your boat. And it would have ended right there. And I know there had been some discussion today at the press conference about whether or not there was signage there. Okay, you can say that. But in Baltimore, at the Baltimore Harbor, the Pride of Baltimore has been parked there. It's docked, I should say, right there at the Inner Harbor. It's been that way for more than two decades. When it is out, yeah, there are some boats that end up there. But when it comes in, people move out the way. You know, it's,
okay.
You know, so I think I would just say that, and I'm not, you know, necessarily denying your point. And I'm not necessarily even defending, you know, a Donald Trump or anyone who supports him. But this issue of the disrespect of someone who was just doing their job, and particularly a black man doing their job, it didn't need to happen.
Everybody feels what happened there. This boils down to these white defendants and attackers being offended by the fact that a black man asked him to move.
Asked.
The black man asked professionally, asked him to move, and they attacked him for whatever reason is behind it. Racial motivation, drunkenness, support for Donald Trump, whatever it was, that they were not going to allow this black man to tell them what to do, and they were going to stand up and they were going to fight about it. But they met some stiff opposition. It reminds me of my mentor who used to lecture here at Howard University when I used to bring him, Dr. Khalid Muhammad. He said, "We sing, lift every voice and sing. Lift every voice and sing till earth and heaven ring. But at the same time, lift every fist and swing." He used to say that at Howard University, and that's what came to my head. That's why these sisters and everybody is calling, because, you know, they're so tired of seeing us beating on each other, destroying each other. And they finally seen some black men stand up for, and women and black folks unite and stand up for a righteous cause and righteous legal self-defense.
Yeah.
And that's what's happening.
Yeah. And remember, authorities said when the Harriet II riverboat was trying to get back to its dock, they went over their PA system to summon whoever's boat this was, please move your boat. And according to authorities, they were met with obscenities. And basically, we don't have to, I believe, in the obscenities. And basically, they weren't going to move the boat. And so that's when the assistant captain from the ship, that's when he went over to try to move it out of the way. So they were asked several times, not only by him, but by the captain of the boat itself, please move your boat. But it wasn't done.
And we want to look at those obscenities. That's what we're looking into. Every one of those obscenities or words that the police chief and the mayor described, we need to look at every word of it, because every word could apply to an Alabama state statute 13A513, which deals with hate crime penalties for unlawful acts, and the penalties when it's motivated on the basis of race. I mean, I'm really interested in looking at all of the language that was used out there that day. I believe there's more to be uncovered. Mm.
Tony, thank you so much for your phone call. Attorney Shabazz, I did want to ask you to just share your thoughts about this incident. Obviously, just happening on Saturday. But just last week, you were coming off what I would describe as a bitter victory in Mississippi.
Yes.
Where five sheriff's deputies from Rankin County, Mississippi, and a police officer pleading guilty to torturing and sexually assaulting two black men. And that had been going on for a while, okay? And that case, I know the lawsuit is still pending. But just talk to me about, you know, coming out of Mississippi and then right next door to Alabama, obviously not the same kind of an event, but I think the feeling is similar.
It means that the South is on our radar, and the South is rising. What Brother Harold is speaking about to you and the listening audience is the case of my clients, Michael Jenkins and Eddie Parker, two black men who in January in Rankin County, Mississippi, their home was invaded without a warrant by five Rankin County deputies and one who joined from Richland. And these six white deputies invaded the home where Eddie Parker and Michael Jenkins were and held them captive for almost 2 hours, and held them captive, handcuffed and bound for 2 hours, where they weren't resisting or opposing at all. These officers, who just pled guilty, all of them, to 14 federal charges. They're going away for a long time, but they went wild in that house. They committed every kind of malicious or wicked or criminal or reckless act that could be found in the criminal codes or the civil statutes. It's one of the worst cases of police brutality ever. So just in short, which I hate to make it short, but so you all know, it's Michael Jenkins and Eddie Parker, and it's Rankin County, Mississippi. These six deputies, including Hunter Elward, what they did was, in the course of kidnapping them, they beat them repeatedly. They tased them repeatedly over several hours. They waterboarded them, such as you found out that was done in Iraq, to put people on their back, pouring liquids on their face to make them appear to be drowning. They came out with the sexual toys or the dildos, and they actually assaulted them with these sexual devices in uniform while these men were handcuffed and bound on the ground. They had them stripped naked in the house and after pelting them with eggs, and they made them strip naked and shower together, all this over the course of a couple of hours. They had a taser contest to see which white deputy could harm the brothers the worst over these 2 hours. It's all in our lawsuit. But the final wicked act was when Hunter Elworth, that deputy, put that service revolver inside Michael Jenkins' mouth and held it for about a minute in his mouth while Michael Jenkins was on his knees, bound. And then he shot him inside of his mouth, attempting to kill him after this torture, 2 hour torture session. I mean, it's incredible. I mean, no one could believe it, but they did believe it on Thursday when the United States Justice Department, under the Civil Rights Division, under the leadership of a black woman, the Civil Rights Division, Kristen Clark, who we had been advocating with or for, and the hammer came down. 6 convictions, 14 federal charges, and it's historic. Yeah. It's the only time that white police officers have ever been held criminally accountable and gone to prison for harming or injuring black person in Mississippi. I mean, so justice is rising. Things are changing. It never happened before in Mississippi, never happened in Rankin County, and what we saw in Alabama has never happened. We've only used to seeing black people being water-hosed in the history of Alabama. So things are changing. Things are changing, but at the same time, you still see horrific racial acts that let us know that 2023 could be as bad or worse than 1963.
During the guilty pleadings, did any of these defendants say why they were doing this?
None of them have offered an explanation of why they would participate in everything that a human being or a law enforcement officer is supposed to be against. Mm-hmm. They couldn't explain why they watched while the other officers committed these horrific crimes of sexual abuse and assault and shooting Michael Jenkins in the mouth. They couldn't justify why the fact that after they shot Jenkins in the mouth and they pushed him back on the floor as he was trying to stumble out of the door, they didn't care about him or whether he would live or die. They gathered on the porch to discuss how they were going to cover it up while he was bleeding out, hoping he was dying. This is what they admitted to. They admitted that they quickly tried to plant a gun on him. He was handcuffed when he was shot, but they went and got a fake gun, a BB gun, to plant and throw at his feet to say he had a gun. They went admitted that they went and got dope out of the vehicle, methamphetamines, brought it into the house and planted it on the men and charged both of these men with possession of methamphetamines. They stole the video recorder. And so some of these 14 charges include many of the acts of cover-up and the conspiracy to obstruct justice. I mean, the lead deputy went right back to the Rankin County Sheriff's Department and notarized a statement saying that Michael Jenkins pointed a gun at him and that's why he shot him. It all came tumbling down. They're all going to prison for many, many years.
Yeah.
And we'll be in Rankin County, Mississippi on Monday to watch them plead guilty to the state charges. And so justice is coming.
Yeah.
Justice.
Real quick, Marcus from New York, final call. You've got 30 seconds. What's on your mind?
Yeah, hi. I just wanted to say real quickly, one, I think we need to be a little cautious. I'm proud as all hell as what went down. You know, I've seen videos where they say Avengers Assemble, and these brothers and sisters were heroes in what they did. But, you know, the NRA is out there, and one of the major reasons these white folks don't want to give up their guns is for incidences like this.
Yeah.
So I just want to caution everybody out there as we go forward, because that's going to be their next step. White folks are going to arm themselves, and they're going to use it as an excuse that the next time a black man put their hands on them, justified or not, they're going to blow his head off.
Marcus,
that's the only point I'm trying to make, brothers.
Thank you so much. I appreciate your phone call, and I'm out of time. We could talk about this for another hour, but I want to thank both of you, reporter Randy Scott in Alabama, attorney Malik Zulu Shabazz, for coming in to talk to us. I really, really appreciate it, and certainly we will continue to watch.
Howard University, my alma mater. Howard University, my double alma mater, undergrad and law school. I'm loving being here, and I honor you, brother.
Well, thank you so much.
You're very welcome. You're very welcome. And just keep your eyes and ears open, everyone.
We most certainly will. That is the Daily Drum for this Tuesday, August 8th. I'm Harold Fisher. Good night.